Much like Jennifer Aiden on her last appearance on Watch What Happens Live, and I do mean last. When it comes to summer, I need to keep hydrated, and that's why I love Fiji water. Jen's thirst might not ever be quenched, but with Fiji water, mine always is. Fiji water is Earth's finest water. Unlike the other two top premium bottled water brands, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring. Fiji water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving it its signature soft, smooth taste. And that's why Fiji water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the U.S. And P.S., Fiji water has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH. Get stocked up on Fiji water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick up some today. Alexis Bellino, imagine how much better her season could have gone if she had just simply quenched that thirst. And my recommendation? It's not just water, it's Fiji water.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
You guys, it's Andy's Girls. I just watched the Potomac premiere, and I'm thrilled that I did, I have to tell you. I think for many reasons, which I'll probably get to, you know, two or three over the course of this 1,700-hour episode, per usual. But obviously, recording this on October 7th as a Jewish Bravo podcaster, one of few. I would be doing a disservice to myself and frankly lying to myself if I didn't acknowledge and take a moment to say that this is a horrifying day and a horrifying anniversary, hopefully for anyone who considers themselves a human person in this world. And I've spent today sharing a lot on social media, as I have been known to do since the day I made that godforsaken decision to post a pair of shoes on Instagram or whatever, however many years ago. I think it actually was, in fact, a pair of shoes. What does that tell you? And they weren't great shoes, I have to say. So things change over time. But so I've been sharing information and organizations that I believe in that are focused on furthering pursuit, certainly against violence and toward peace and solutions and listening. And there are many individuals available if you are looking for perspectives that are focused on building bridges and listening and amplifying the stories of civilians under attack. I know that there are resources in the show notes for every episode of Andy's Girls. I don't know how many people actually access them, but they're there just in case. And I'm going to continue to use my voice. And I have to say, without going down a path that I certainly have in full on a episode of AG called I'll Tell You How I'm Doing, Dorinda Style. I might have fucked that up, so I apologize, but you can find it in the RSS feed for this podcast that you're listening to, that I don't know a single Jewish person who I have in my life, who I consider fortunate to have in my life, who isn't horrified by 10/7 and everything that has been seemingly done in its name. And I think if you consider yourself an ally to a marginalized community and or a member of a marginalized community, I would hope that the work that you do to use your voice is as inclusive as humanly possible. And you know, I don't know a Jewish person who isn't horrified by what is going on in Gaza. And so it's very tough and complicated to talk about these things, because I personally have been overwhelmed with like a barrage of anti-Semitic attacks from people where if you look in the text thread, DM thread, it could be like years of thank you for using your voice, thank you for using your voice, and then go fuck yourself. You're a white woman. You don't know anything. Jews aren't real. You drink the blood of youth. And so it has been sort of an odd experience, because for whatever reason, saying, and this is just my personal take, and we will shift to housewives in a second, but like calling for a ceasefire and the return of hostages somehow makes me a radical to a number of people that I would have considered seemingly like-minded. And that has been incredibly unfortunate. And so I would just again suggest that if you have any interest in learning more about how Jews and Palestinians are also people, you can find those resources in the show notes. And there are so many organizations, including Standing Together, which I'm a strong supporter of, who are focused on genuinely building bridges and actually include and are focused on the voices of people actually affected, not just Susan, who knows an awful lot because she's a sophomore at NYU. And I think that's important. I think it's important for all of us to use our voices and just acknowledge how terribly sad and upsetting this world is and has become. And if you have a Jewish or Palestinian friend in your life, today is a good time to just check in. Any day is a good time to check in. And if you find yourself nervous about using your voice now where you haven't prior, if you think that silence is a permissible option in ways that it hasn't prior, I would ask you to ask yourself why that is. Is it because some of us in maybe progressive circles have existed in worlds in which we maybe have sat in a lot of comfort? Sidebar, Jews are not a monolith, and it's possible to imagine a marginalized community under attack and not assume that they feel the way maybe you would think that they might be thinking or would like them to think, because it's an easier way to form an opinion of a group of people as a collective. But the organizations that I'm going to note in the show notes are all about focusing on the very apparent and deeply unsettling dehumanization of Israelis and Palestinians, and of Jews and of Muslims and of Arabs. And it's something that I have seen so much of in circles that have really, really confused me, and in any number of DMs. So that's kind of where my focus is, because it's not about sharing a political belief. It's really about just kind of understanding that at the end of the day, pain is universal, and it's not equalizing one community's pain to another, certainly not. But it is saying that the level of but, or the level of you are not innocent, you three-year-old child, because you represent, can be really, really complicated. And so thankfully, there are people far, far smarter than I am, who I am so thankful exist, because it is sort of something that I consider myself required to listen to these folks and share. And so that's that. There's not a whole lot else that I can add to the conversation without turning this into a podcast and episode that I don't want it to become, because I just don't know that this is the place for that. Every day is the place for it. And I know that a lot of people listening to the podcast look at this pod for an escape and a connection in other ways. And if you're interested in hearing my voice talking about Potomac, or why am I about to say Beverly Hills? Beverly Hills is like on my mind recently, and I don't know why. God, Kyle, she just has a place in my brain at all times. Or LOL New York. LOL. Can you imagine the first thing someone is thinking is like, God, I need to, before I talk about Orange County or Salt Lake or Potomac, we need to have a chat about New New York. And I love that. I love that for you if you do feel that way. But I am, in fact, a whole person. I know that can be complicated, but I carry multitudes. I know that there's just a lot of division and violence and upset, and so much of it needs to be heard, and so much of it just furthers a lot of madness. And so if you have any interest in understanding, building bridges, or acknowledging just a small moment of taking a breath, which is such a privilege that so many do not have available, then there we are. Okay, we need to talk about Potomac. Okay, can we take a moment and talk about Potomac? Now, I said prior to the Potomac premiere that I was cautiously optimistic. And I have to tell you that while I guessed like no other during the first mere seconds of the premiere at that, shall we call it an interpretation? Although as she later fact check on Watch What Happens Live, there was actually not a deer involved, which was an interesting dramatic setup. But listen, that interpretation reenactment, sorry if my voice is going in and out, I'm supposed to call it COVID cough, LOL, the pneumonia cough lingers. But the interpretation reenactment, what an interesting choice that was, huh? I started watching and I was like, are we supposed to be laughing right now? I mean, I know that Potomac brings with it a lot of light. And I was cautiously optimistic about the premiere. I still feel that way about the season, which is a huge win. Like the fact that I felt like I was sort of softening into the premiere. And I mean that in a good way, where I'm like, you know what? This energy feels realistic. We're not going to completely knock this out of the gate day one, nor could we. There was just too much that went wrong last season and a huge cast shift, which would make going from like wherever the fuck we are, whatever grade you would assign that last season and oy vey, that reunion to now, it really wouldn't be realistic. And there was so much about the energy of the premiere that I just felt like, yeah. Like where some of it obviously from a creative artistic perspective made me feel a little, okay, what's happening here? Although how much of that is on the producers versus frankly Karen herself? There was also just, I just had this feeling of like, God, it feels good to not feel entirely weird watching this franchise, which for so long, to me, like, you know, OG New York will always have a place in my soul. And so there are certain seasons of certain franchises. Certainly we've seen, certainly over and over again, certainly we've seen that on Salt Lake City. We've seen it in Beverly Hills. With New York, OG New York, if you had asked me several years ago what my favorite franchise would be, I would probably call out New York. And I do think that that's particular to if you ask someone where what their favorite franchise is and they live in an area where the franchise is filmed, I do think that there's sort of a little bit of a loyalty there. And also New Yorkers are deeply annoying. So like that might be a part of it too. I'm not a Yankees gal. Go Red Sox. I have no idea what sports are, so please don't take that seriously. But there's something to be said for like caring for your hometown player and in your hometown team. But Potomac, I think for a lot of people, they might say spiritually, you know, whatever franchise is my fave, and maybe Potomac would be that. But also, which is the franchise that entertains you the most? Which is the franchise that shines brightly in a way that is more unique than any other? Which is the franchise that has like such super strong superstar OG cast members that you can't imagine a season in which they are not part of this universe and this world? And I think Potomac for a while was that, and then it started to skid and then went entirely off the rails. And so to feel a little bit optimistic, cautiously optimistic, I think is a good thing. I think that means there's going to be maybe some weirdness, maybe some, God, let's not use road metaphors, shall we? I just kind of feel like we're in a solid, reasonable, realistic, positive, optimistic place. Is that odd considering how the episode began? I really don't know what the editors were thinking. I think maybe they were trying to do some sort of like beginning of the Beverly Hills season when Dorit was robbed, where it's like very intense and heavy, but also adding in, honestly, a little bit of an LOL. You cannot tell me that they were taking that reenactment editorial choice entirely seriously. It just didn't feel that for me, especially when we find out on Watch What Happens that the deer wasn't a part of the vibe. Like that was just a choice, I assume, as a callback to the fact that when Giselle was driving Karen to brunch, that they saw a deer. And when she says it's a sign, I've just watched, obviously, the reenactment. I'm thinking like she's noting it's a sign from the DUI, but she just might be saying, oh, there are deer frolicking in a wooded area. Isn't that a sign of something, including that there are deer that were driving by? Like if there were no deer involved in Karen's situation, I don't entirely know why, of all of the things to focus on. I mean, if it is a genuine reenactment, why am I focusing so much on the deer? This is like a real, instead of a deer John, it's like a deer Karen. Like, why am I focusing so much on the deer? I don't entirely know, except how could I not? Because if you're doing a reenactment and you include timestamps, and I'm being led to believe the timestamps of like when Karen is driving and at what point she swerves and everything else is supposed to be factual, why do you include she's swerving because of a deer if that didn't happen? Unless I'm misunderstanding what Karen said on Watch What Happens, which is entirely possible. But it does also connect with the weirdness associated with Karen's arrest, because her statement immediately following, like if I'm remembering correctly, there was news that came out, might have been TMZ initially, that broke news that she was in a really bad car accident. So obviously there's a lot of shock. And then she puts out a statement, I think either before or right after the follow-up. It might have been before. And the follow-up is also she was arrested or cited. That was a part of the first kind of release of news. And then the follow-up is allegedly a DUI. And Karen's reaction to that is pretty consistent from her public statement through what we saw in the actual premiere. The energy here is in line with her behavior. And so her initial reaction, which she said to TMZ, was, this is like right after the accident, she said, "Thank you for all of your prayers and well wishes during this very frightening experience. I'm still in shock from last night's incident, but grateful to be alive today. With the passing of my beloved mother, grief comes and goes in waves, and with Mother's Day approaching, it has felt more like a tsunami. Last night, I met a girlfriend for dinner. We talked and brought up some very emotionally sensitive topics. I was crying on my way home and saw a car heading right for me. Not a deer. I swerved to avoid the head-on collision, hit the divider, and then a tree." Can I just sidebar and say, just once again, If she put out a statement saying it was a car, why did we include a deer? Okay, continuing on. I'm hurt, bruised up a bit, but so grateful I am alive. I did receive citations, one of which was unrelated to the incident, which is understandable. But what was most surprising is that the car that almost hit me just drove away. What, ma'am? She finished the statement by saying, I would like to stress it's important to understand your emotional state when driving, and may this be a reminder to all to use their seatbelts. My mother might have been my guardian angel, but the seatbelt saved my life. Okay, so if we know at this point that we have been arrested for a DUI, for her to focus her statement on seatbelt safety is fascinating, as was her decision and her choices throughout this episode. I mean, first off, saying, I can't wait for the truth to come out. I don't know that I believe that. And if Karen actually believes it, I'm concerned. Because if she wants the truth to come out, that's a very different situation than like any negotiations with the court about, you know, what this means. It's her second offense, which is so wild to have previously been cited for a DUI and to put out a statement the second time this has happened to you, you've made this decision in your life and say seatbelt safety is what I need to focus on now. I mean, even the language that I just used, like this happened to you, that's the problem here, is that Karen's perspective is like, this thing happened to me that was very sad, so I need sympathy. I'm not saying that Karen doesn't deserve sympathy for the grief that is ongoing, difficulties in her marriage with Ray, which for whatever reason genuinely surprised me when she dropped that with Giselle. I don't know why I was surprised, especially when the flashback to like a 2020 episode of someone saying, I think a therapist, somebody saying to Ray, do you still love Karen? And he was like, I guess, I think I am, which I was so taken aback by that. I had completely forgotten that that moment happened. But the language that she used during this episode, accidents happen, I have a bit of an issue with that because, sure, accidents happen, but so do decisions. And there is a huge difference from saying, I cannot share information to I am a victim of this. I don't think that Karen is a victim of making the decision to drink and drive. It doesn't mean I don't have sympathy and empathy for her. I absolutely do. It doesn't mean I want to see her like behind bars, but it also means that she needs to, sorry, the pneumonia voice is continuing. She needs to take some ounce of accountability, and she can. And the reason I know she can is because Shannon did immediately. Shannon has been dragged over the coals for her decision. The fact that she could have greatly injured herself, could have injured Archie, could have injured a stranger, could have hit someone and not a house. Like, she deserves to be held accountable for that. And she has held herself accountable. I don't see any of that from Karen. So I don't know if she is in denial or if she feels that acknowledging that she made decisions will affect her legally. I also don't know what she's been advised by her lawyer. If her lawyer's been like, listen, you might plead not guilty, we might litigate this process, and you're also filming a reality TV show, I don't want you to talk about this. And I also want you to sort of like act out someone who I guess is caught up in a conspiracy. At the end of the day, either she did this or she did not. I'm not getting from her the vibe that like this thing happened and I did it. I heard her on Watch What Happens. She definitely seemed unsettled and nervous, which I can absolutely sympathize with and appreciate. And she did say at one point, you know, I just want to make really, really clear that I would never forgive myself if someone had been injured, if I had injured someone. And I absolutely, of course, absolutely 100% believe her, because I it can't be a real conversation about like, I don't think Karen's a bad person, because when you get into whether or not someone is good or bad, it's just you lose all the nuance and complications in life. Then it's just a nothing burger. But also some people might just genuinely come off as pieces of shit. And I don't feel that about Karen at all. She can come off as like pompous and intentionally disconnected. And so what she's talking about now is interesting. Like the fact that she and Giselle are sitting down, I thought that Giselle was the perfect choice and the only choice for Karen to start to unpack or start to discuss or not, but at least be asked questions about what happened, because they really genuinely feel like equals and contemporaries. There's just something about Giselle and Karen, regardless, I think, of how you feel about Giselle, but that's a big regardless, that it just felt like the right call. And I do also think Giselle has softened. She's talked about the fact that her father's death has contributed to her discovering empathy for the first time. And I am thankful that she has. And I'm not taking away from that at all. But I also do think it was vitally important that Robin was removed from the show, because I think Giselle doesn't have that kind of safety net she's had. And she has been so kind of swirling in her own universe and her own bubble for so long that I think she's lost focus or perspective. And Robin not being there, to me, genuinely, and frankly, Candace, although I'm sad that Candace is gone, I think it has removed a lot of the pressure here and provides an opportunity for Giselle to choose to soften herself. And I saw it. I really genuinely saw it in the first episode. I was like, okay, this feels optimistic. It really does. And I love Giselle. I think she's like a top tier Bravo Leb, but I have not enjoyed her for a minute and thought she really, really kind of lost the plot on what the fuck she was supposed to be doing on this show, and maybe took her role for granted. And I just see a shift from her. And absolutely, it could be in large part because of just, you know, the incredibly difficult and complicated journey of losing a parent. And I also think that just a repositioning in the cast has been a helpful opportunity for everyone who's left on the show. And it wasn't, I mean, the Candace decision was a big one for Candace to decide to leave the show. But I also truly think that Robin leaving has opened up an alternate path for Giselle, which I appreciate.
As AGs know, I am spiritually mid-20s plus. And like many people, the conversation about saving and investing can feel really complicated. And for me personally, often feels like it's out of reach. Like I'm joining a conversation in the middle of it. I'm not quite sure really how to start, which is why I am so thankful for Acorns. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. BCC, PK, and Dorit. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. That's perfect for me and my life. I want to make positive change, but so often it's hard to figure out where to begin. Acorns does that work. I always felt like in order to start investing, I needed to have one big lump sum. But Acorns takes away that kind of stress. It's small, important changes that you can make in your life for your future. Head to acorns.com/andyscrolls or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/andyscrolls. I started taking Hormone Harmony because for me, that time of the month feels like it became the entire month. Dealing with cravings, bloating, not feeling like myself. Well, now it's easier to manage PMS and menopause with Hormone Harmony. My number one, supporting hormonal balance and regulation. Hormone Harmony also helps relieve symptoms of menopause, improves sleep quality, relieves hot flashes and mood swings.
Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It is zero sugar and is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. And the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews, and there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ANDYSCROLLS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ANDYSCROLLS for 15% off today. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Therapy is an incredible tool for facing your fears and finding ways to overcome them. For me, I'm always nervous about the unknown. But sometimes the scariest thing is not facing our fears in the first place and holding ourselves back. For me, therapy has been an incredible motivating part of my life. It has helped me personally, professionally, with the podcast, learning more about myself, how to improve setting boundaries, working through problems, big and small. It has been the single best tool in my life to better my life. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Overcome your fears with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/andyscrolls today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/andyscrolls. But, you know, Giselle needed to ask Karen difficult questions, and she did. And Giselle has a way of doing that with, you know, a certain amount of side eye, which we need. We need that from Giselle. And also, it's difficult to sort of discuss this when it comes to Karen, because I'm just seeing such a different person than the Shannon of it all. And it was interesting to me because on Watch What Happens, Karen was like, there's no comparison. They're totally different situations. And I'm thinking to myself, yes, they are totally different situations. You've also been cited for a fucking ton of shit, ma'am. So like, there's a whole lot here to unpack. You didn't run into a house, so mazel tov, but there's also a lot here and questions about Karen's relationship with alcohol, I think, were handled sort of similar to Shannon's in being not great. I think the way that people are tiptoeing around it on Potomac again with this kind of energy of slight LOL isn't entirely appropriate. But I also think Karen's response to all of this, removing any responsibility from herself, except for saying on Watch What Happens, you know, I'm so glad that people weren't hurt, to deny the reality of what happened, say that she's essentially a victim of like fake news or some sort of arrest that shouldn't have taken place. I don't know what other truth should come out that requires her not to acknowledge decision that she's made. And I, again, don't know what she's been told as advice by her legal counsel. And I do understand that she doesn't want to talk about specifics because of that. I also think she's using it as an excuse. And also to not acknowledge in any way and put out a public statement saying the big lesson here is to wear your seatbelt. If we're talking about public safety and you've decided to drink and drive for the second time caught for that, that's not great. And I want to hear more about whatever the fuck is going on between her and Ray. And I want to see Karen open up. And you can see within her, it felt a little bit like she knew and was obviously resigned to the fact that questions were going to be made. But also her behavior at the end of the episode was a little wild to me. Like the, I'm hoping to win. Either you're a bad friend or a soldier. The idea that Karen needs soldiers on her side, I was concerned about that because I'm like, okay, so does a soldier mean just being silent? Is that what we're looking for? Nobody asking questions? Members of the cast, I mean, listen, in this moment, certainly, just like many others, the cast is representing questions that the audience has and the needs that producers have for information to be discussed. And so her saying, if you're asking me anything, you mean me harm, is not, I just don't think it's a realistic choice. And I think if she really thinks that she's in a lot of denial about her role in this, because if you are driving the car, the DUI did not just happen to you. You made the decision to do it. And I don't know that we are ever going to get Karen accepting responsibility, which is concerning to me, because then we're jumping into like, but I'm naming a non-alcoholic drink the Grand Dame, and, you know, isn't a move that's intended to be somewhat sly potentially. But also, we're like skipping ahead to Karen's relationship with alcohol, but she's not acknowledging that alcohol contributed to what happened and the fact that she may have, you know, done something that's against the law. So where we're going to find ourselves with this, I don't know if we're just going to skip over to like, okay, well, we made some sort of agreement and I'm moving forward. And that's the truth of the matter is that I'm moving on. We've skipped an enormous step here, which is, I think, unfortunate. I think it's unfortunate for Karen on the show because I think it's going to make her job more difficult. I don't know if she's doing this because she doesn't want to like give an inch here, but fuck, if you're putting out a statement saying like seatbelts aren't great, I mean, so, just kidding. Oh my God. Not wearing a seatbelt isn't great. And we want to, I'm team seatbelt. We want to wear our seatbelt. So if we're putting out a statement being like, the most important lesson that I've learned here after, you know, everyone found out that I allegedly was drinking and driving, and the most important safety announcement that I need to take when it comes to accepting responsibility is to wear a seatbelt, I really think that we have lost something. And I think it's going to continue to be slightly uncomfortable for Karen, as it kind of should be, you know? And I also think the way that the cast is sort of talking around her relationship with alcohol is one side of the spectrum, and Tamara screaming at Shannon that she's a drunk is the other. And it's also just kind of the difficulty of the dance of all of this, because that's actually that's a serious conversation and one that deserves Karen's involvement. And yet the way that the show is structured is to add a lot of light. And I don't know that Housewives has quite figured out when it comes to conversations around a person's relationship with alcohol, substance, possible substance abuse, that they've really figured out how to have it. Because so often scenes of heightened drama and conflict on Housewives also involve a punchline. And it's not to say that you can't find moments of like light and something else while you're going through enormously challenging times. But I don't know that the edit around this, the choices of cast members when it comes to this, is being entirely responsible to the audience, because then it does feel like very differently from Orange County, where it's like almost coming out as a threat. But on Potomac, I'm like, are we joking about this? Is that a producer thing? Is that an edit thing? Is that because the cast doesn't know how to talk about it, but they're being encouraged to talk about it, including in front of Karen? I don't know. Or is it one of those moments where maybe the cast doesn't necessarily have questions about her relationship with alcohol? Maybe the drink decision was genuinely done to like point fun at this, but then the same kind of result applies, which is if we're poking fun at a really, really serious issue and possible conversation, one that you're sort of having with Karen, but really not, I'm not quite sure what that does for us. But, you know, again, I really genuinely did like the episode. I do want to make that clear, regardless of the deer involved. I also don't know how Mia doesn't yet know Karen's name. She did call her Karen Hooger, which I watched multiple times. There were a few moments. Well, I've technically only watched the ep once. I've gone back to a couple moments. The Hooger of it all just really not since Luann tried to spell Dame Frankel's name, Bethany, with all the A's and maybe one N and a couple of Y's, because why not? I really genuinely was like, do you not know Karen Huger is not Huger? So that was something. And also, this is such a small moment, but I did reach out to friend of the pod, Michael Arsenault, because I was like, Michael, I'm in the middle of watching this episode. Have you watched? And Michael said, yes, I have. And I said, okay, when we get to the Dr. Wendy resigning from her work as a professor, which is a big moment, I watched her send that work email and I thought, is email different than what I think it is? Because while many AGs are survivors of hashtag old audio, so I'm not really the person to talk to or advise on tech stuff, I was like, did she not just close a Word document? Because the way it was framed was, I spent way too much time thinking about this. I was like, it looked like she just X'd out of a Word document. But then I'm thinking to myself, could she have just viewed an attachment that she was sending over email? No, because if she had done that, she would have X'd out of the Word document and then also pressed send. So why are we doing this? Like, can we just take a moment with Dr. Wendy and at some point acknowledge that, not to compare her to Giselle in this way, but here we go. I mean, they're best friends, so why not? With Dr. Wendy, can we get to a point where we don't need her to come up with an individual storyline? Now that she has left her professor job and her work in that area and is potentially focusing more on her work in entertainment or her work as a creator in other ways and her maybe her YouTube show, other stuff, there certainly is going to be stuff to unpack, including her working and, you know, interviewing at the White House. That's a big fucking deal. And I'm sure there's going to be some sort of conversation with her mom over the season about this decision, which I'm interested in. But also, like, the bar thing, the other stuff, it feels like she sometimes finds herself in a position where she has to create a storyline that doesn't feel organic. And just this one moment, I just kind of thought to myself, can we not do that with Dr. Wendy? Can we just like have her have a conversation and either figure out the difference between a Word document and an email? If I'm right, which I absolutely might not be, if that's just a small moment and doesn't happen again, God bless. But can we also just come to the decision and determination that, like, Dr. Wendy is a great ensemble member, and some full-time housewives, it's unfair to ask other people to carry the load more. But also, let's be realistic. Mia's life right now is a shit show. So, like, she's going to take up more oxygen in the room when it comes to personal dynamics and stories. But Dr. Wendy still has a job to do. The job might be, like, having conversations with Mia, having conversations with other people, focusing on her friendship with the women. I think there's this like built-in pressure that the women on these shows are often forced into, of like, something big has to be happening in my life that feels dynamic, that feels theatrical. And that's just not organic to housewives. And also, there's enough theatrics in being on this show and sitting down for these dinners and going on these vacations and getting into moments of conflict or not. Like, there are enough stakes there that I think, you know, if something happens in her life next season, God bless. But we don't necessarily need to see that. Maybe I'm just pulling out too much from a premiere episode that's really reintroducing us to the cast and saying, like, this is where they are, this is what they're working on. And she just didn't want to send that email, or the timing wasn't appropriate and she already had, or something else. But couldn't she just talk to Eddie? Is that enough? Or is it just a producer saying, like, I need you to do something else. I need you to do something so it kicks off the fact that, like, we were here for this moment. And it's interesting, actually, that I'm thinking about the idea of, like, we were here for this moment and the moment feeling fake, because then I was thinking about the beginning of the reenactment stuff and I'm thinking to myself, like, we've leaned in way too much Netflix energy. Why didn't we start with the fake Erica Jane divorce reveal scene where, like, we just so happened on Kyle doing her makeup and Dorit doing whatever the fuck and somebody else being there and then picking up the phone and being like, oh my God, did you hear Erica just filed for divorce? And we just so happened to be in the dressing rooms and to be in the makeup areas where all of these people are finding out this thing that absolutely was not revealed at that actual moment in time. Why didn't we do that with Karen? Not to not to completely skirt the like staying away from forced and artificial stuff, but the reenactment to me felt weird. Like, it was just strange. It was a strange choice, unless you're making this into a joke, which is a strange thing to do at this point in this generation that we're in of some sort of so-called backwash version of the hashtag reality reckoning. It was just a little weird to me, but there also was other stuff to focus on. I am so appreciative when it comes to people understanding the job required that Gordon is still filming for this show. That feels like a fucking miracle. And I also think because of everything that's happened with him and his work and the loss of Mia's job at his business, at their business, that he understands that, like, we need to be, we all need, this is a family commitment. So we're going to co-parent, which we heard an awful lot about, but also we're going to share some sort of custody of filming together on this show. And that has to be incredibly uncomfortable. So the fact that they're doing it is great. Although what was shared on TV in this episode was confusing to me. I am extraordinarily confused about some of the conversations on parenting. Like, I don't have kids. I thought Gordon saying he wanted to be the person, the father figure, and also the quite literal parent taking his son to get a haircut is entirely understandable. I didn't understand why Mia was like, that's not a fair thing to do. I thought he can set a boundary here and be like, I am my son's dad. To be continued, apparently. How is that a thing? But I am my son's dad forever, regardless, by the way, of what those paternity results say. Hopefully that's a conversation that they have at some point in time, because holy fuck otherwise. But I want to take my son to get his haircut. I don't want my estranged, soon-to-be ex-wife, I assume, is, you know, significant other to be the one to do it. I think that's entirely understandable, and I would hope that Mia would respect it, but I know that there's a lot of complications there. And I also think the way she's talking about this paternity test is so confusing to me, because she's talking about whoever the rightful parent is, and I'm thinking to myself, who has raised this child? Are we deciding that the results of this paternity test will provide more information and potentially a new and different kind of relationship with this man who has seemingly been in these kids' lives for a second, for more than a second, rather, LOL. I mean, my God, the way the episode ended, holy shit. But also, what is rightful parent to me was just strange language, because I'm thinking, like, Gordon is going to continue to be this child's, Gordon raised this child, is this child not still Gordon's son, regardless of whatever the results were? The results add obviously complications, and hopefully Ink steps up to the table if the results reveal that he's the biological father, parent, whatever language you want to use here. But the child's dad, Jeremiah's dad, is Gordon. I would hope that me and Gordon have that conversation and understanding prior to this result stuff happening. And I also think this whole conversation on what was revealed last season is really fucking tough, and was kind of fucked in the way that it was presented by the cast at the hat party, which was not totally successful. The idea of wearing weird, like, punishment hats. I think I'm like, Giselle, I know that you're putting an effort, and I love that you are. Thank God, finally. It's been a minute. But also, we don't really need to make it into a game in that way. Although the hats that she actually had and gave to people, I thought were gorgeous. Like Karen's hat, I was like, oh shit, that's stunning on her. But the way that the cast kind of discussed Mia, how do you feel about being a bad mom because of all of this stuff we now know, was not handled as well as I think it could have been, because it became a
blaming Mia for headlines about things that Gordon shared that now a ton of people know and are talking about because Gordon shared them on camera versus the actual behaviors, and they were conflating the two. And I know that they're connected. He wouldn't be talking about it on camera if it hadn't allegedly happened or something close to it happened, necessitating him to discuss it, try to punish her by mentioning it on camera, or just venting all of it out, because that the scene between them in the kitchen last season was really fucking intense and loaded. And if you are listening to this episode and having not watched Potomac before, first off, number one, how dare you? But also, thank you. But also, how dare you? And if you haven't watched Potomac, which, you know, should be your number one priority in life, forget what I've said about the difficult last couple seasons, watch that segment between Gordon and Mia last season, because it was just a fucking unbelievable, real, intense, upsetting, complicated, dynamic, extended scene between the two of them. And it's tough because Gordon, yeah, shared this stuff that got a lot of attention. Is it fair to the kids that now this is in the headlines? Well, that's also, unfortunately, one of the complications of signing up for reality TV. Like, the Housewives talk about it being a family endeavor, but how much of a decision do these kids have, especially when they're young children? They don't understand what any of this is about. I mean, ideally, they don't know exactly what's being discussed. That was the whole LOL when Ramona was like, hey, is Bethany, is Bryn upset in the schoolyard because people are talking about a movie where you showed your tits 25 years ago? Like, is that affecting her as a third grader? Like, there are certain times where there's a presumption that the kids know more because it's being used as a weapon against their parents, but also moments where we find out, yeah, kids heard shit in the schoolyard or maybe from the parents of friends at playdates or maybe from Googling shit online or whatever else, or maybe from being in the room or near a room where things are being filmed, where they're being, there's too much information being shared to these kids about their parents as people and also personalities. And it's unfortunate because when you think of who's making the biggest sacrifice when their parents decide to sign up and do reality TV, I mean, it often falls to these children who you might say, mom might say, hey, I'm joining the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. How do you feel about that? You know, Susie Q might be like, that's great. I love, you know, I love performance, or that'll be interesting, or I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, but you seem excited or whatever. Like, oh, you're going to buy me a toy, and the toy is probably, you know, a mortgage. I mean, whatever the hell the kids are getting in BH. Like, when the Housewives talk about, like, we've all signed on to this together, how much awareness can these kids have of what they're actually signing on for?
There are so many moments that make up a year. The big moments and milestones, birthdays, anniversaries, when Shan came to the clawfish. And then there are the small moments, the slow morning spent making a decadent breakfast, running to a grocery store to get 9 lemons to put in a bowl. All of these moments come together to create our year and in the end, create our life. Artifact Uprising wants to help you preserve your meaningful moments this holiday season. Whether you want to say, I love you with the perfect gift, display favorite memories in your home, or connect with loved ones throughout the year, BCC Shan, they have a product you can personalize. Artifact Uprising is a Colorado-based company that creates premium quality, customizable photo goods for your digital photos. I just ordered a few photo books with Artifact Uprising, a hardcover travel photo book in this gorge shade of Pacific blue, which is perfect for the credenza in my living room, devoted to my first ever trip to Paris, and a photo book in midnight blue, one for myself and for my family. Moments from my childhood, my parents spending time together, it is going to be the perfect gift for Tobes and Chard. This is something incredibly special that will keep us connected. Artifact Uprising makes it easy to tell your story. Through the end of the year, AGs can give Artifact Uprising a try and get 20% off for new customers or 15% off if you've purchased before. Just visit artifactuprising.com and use code AndysGirls through December 31. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build your own perfect clothes with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. I am so thankful to Armoire because I was in a genuine pickle last weekend. I was rushing to New Jersey, shout out NJ, the Garden State, not hunting for new housewives, but going to a friend's baby shower, and I had literally nothing to wear. So thank goodness for Armoire. I opened my bag from Armoire, grabbed this beautiful, bright lime green Sachin and Bobby midi dress, and it fit like a glove, and it saved me all of that extra stress. There are so many benefits to Armoire. You always have something new to wear without the hassle and closet clutter. It's sustainable. You no longer have to feel bad about only wearing an outfit once, and Armoire is women-founded and women-led. Right now, AGs can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/andyscrolls. That is armoire.style, armoire.style/andyscrolls to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. As AGs know, I am spiritually mid-20s plus. And you know who else is? My dear, close, personal best friend and also deity, Jennifer Lopez. J-Lo is actually the reason that Google launched Google Images, because of that infamous Versace dress. And she's still, 20 years later, more sought after than ever before. With skin like hers, it's not a surprise. Love don't cost it a thing. But I don't want to continue to wait for tonight. Whoa. And thanks to JLo Beauty, we can glow right along with her. Get that JLo glow for yourself with JLo Beauty's Deluxe Kit, the one-and-done skincare solution clinically proven to tighten and lift for instant, long-lasting results. And much like my dear best friend, Jen, I absolutely agree. My personal favorite is JLo's Limitless Glow face mask. It is so soothing, easy to apply, cleansed my skin, had the mask on, and truly was having a spa night at home. So if you're tired of trying to crack your own skincare code, try JLo Beauty for 60 days. If you're not completely satisfied, just return the bottles, even if empty, and get your money back. Want that JLo glow? Head to jlobeauty.com/andyscrolls and get a special gift of 4 free masks for listeners of Andy Scrolls. Head to jlobeauty.com/andyscrolls for 4 free masks and free shipping today. That's jlobeauty.com/andyscrolls. And also, while I can certainly appreciate and empathize with, you know, women on the show saying it's terrible what your kids have had to go through with this, I don't know if challenging Mia on her mothering was entirely appropriate at that time. But I do also understand asking questions of like, okay, well, you're talking about this relationship. We're talking about your separation from Gordon. But also there are questions about things that we are concerned with as people, as mothers, that like your kids were introduced to this man who they may not have understood was a romantic figure of yours or was. And that information came to them because they like told one of the kids told Gordon they saw you two in a you know, hugging or whatever the fuck else. Like, it's that does get complicated, and I understand why a reference to it might want to be made, but I also think it's incredibly challenging because Mia is not the one that shared it, but also once it's been shared and the cat's out of the bag, people might have questions about those decisions. And also that doesn't negate Mia's experience in a relationship where Gordon is acknowledging he was terrible to her. So it feels like when you're asking and challenging this woman, you're negating what she went through, the reasons why she filed for separation, why she's going through a divorce. But also there are some sort of gray areas and questions here about like the decisions made in those moments. And I would also just say, if your kids are processing their parents sharing custody. It's incredible that Gordon is moved back to Potomac and is seeing the kids every day. That's great. But if your kids are dealing with this massive adjustment in their life, the fact that, like, I mean, I have to say sort of God forbid, but God forbid the paternity results show that Gordon is not the biological parent, to just kind of assume that that's immediately going to change the child's relationship with his father is a tough one. Because, I mean, like, just because you know information does not mean that when your child is, I don't know how old me and Gordon's son is, but like 8, I don't know, 7, 8, 11, I have no idea. But young, that doesn't mean that if you have a new information that is going to rock this child's world, does not mean that the second you get these results, I'm not saying that this would certainly happen, but Mia's language around this seems to imply that, like, if the results showed that Gordon was not the biological parent, just the way she seemed to be intimating that, well, everything would change is not great to me. Because I just think this child is already processing a pretty huge life adjustment, that the idea that you would immediately need and be required to share this information is not ideal. Not to say their son should never know, but just to say, let's be cautious here at such a sensitive time of how we're handling this, because there is, you know, a reasonable, I think, decision that can be made to, like, just see how these kids are right now. And there's such a thing as, like, sharing too much when they're this young, or just figuring out a way to do it, I think, is the conversation. I would hope that there would be a lot of talking and counseling involved in this. If we go down that path, which I honestly feel like we won't, because wouldn't we have heard about that if that actually happened? I don't know. I think it's hopefully they've kind of figured this out, and we won't have to go down sort of that alternate path, because that would be, I think, really, really tough. And I also think the conversation around, you know, Gordon saying Mia, I don't know if it's a question of, like, Mia cheating on him versus immediately dating as soon as they had separated, before even officially separating. But I also think there's a level of the way the women at the Hatterday party were talking about it, of, like, talking about the timing of Mia being with Ink, which I get, but also, like, are we completely losing Gordon's role in this, in his treatment of Mia, in pushing her away, which he's acknowledging in scenes with Mia? I don't know if we're entirely getting it. Speaking of things I totally don't get, great to hear that Ashley has finally figured out who she married and wants to no longer have that happening anymore. Great to hear she's ready to start dating. That might be news to Luke. Who she was she not dating him for a minute, or was that not a real thing that happened? Because maybe she meant ready to start dating as in, like, more fully and purposefully than, like, I don't know, cute guy in the Bravo universe. The gods connected it and we just found ourselves in a little bit of a flirt and whatever else, flirting, I don't know. I just thought maybe dating more fully? Have we not? I thought that was a whole thing, right? Was that she was already dating? I mean, I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad to hear that she thinks there will be no issue with custody. Can't wait for her to be reintroduced to Michael. I think he is a walking issue with everything that involves power and control, but maybe I'm wrong. I would love to be wrong. I genuinely would love to be wrong. I don't know how I feel about the new people meeting the cast. I think I feel positive, right? I think I just feel like, good. I think the new full-time cast member, whose name might be Stacy, and I might have fucked that up, so I apologize, seemed solid. And the introduction of Where's the Diamond was weird, because that felt really forced. But also, sure, I get it. Premiere episode, we need to reintroduce some difficulties in this new person's life who we're just being reintroduced to. I love the fact that she comes from, God help me, I forget if it was QVC or HSN, but I genuinely love that. I think that's super fascinating. And can't wait to hear more about her. I really do. And also, there's so many friends of this season. And I love that. Let's see what happens. Let's kind of like survival of the fittest. Let's see who comes out and really, really pops and captures our attention. That's a good position to be in. And I think that's the right way to go. Of like, we have new personalities. We're introducing them. Let's have them at group events. Maybe we'll see some more one-on-one stuff. And we'll find out wherever we land by, I would assume, mid-season. I don't think it's like an end-of-season conversation. I would think that's where we find ourselves and where we are. It's solid, cautiously optimistic, genuinely. I am curious for people's thoughts on the decision to do the reenactment. Like, did that land? Was that like an LOL moment? And if people found it like super entertaining and great and, oh my God, so original, except is it? Is it really? I felt like we were leaning in on a lot of kind of Jen Shah energy for it with this like true crime era of housewifery. That's maybe not great, not ideal. And I'm certainly not comparing the Grand Dame to, God forbid, Jen Shah. But I'm curious if people felt like it really landed and was like the right way to start the season, or if there was just another way to do it. Maybe with the cast fake finding out for the first time or talking about it versus the reenactment. Just genuinely, like, was the reenactment the right call? Let me know your thoughts and feels. And speaking of thoughts and feels, I am going to be recording a Satchel Spectacular this week for the AG Patreon. So slide into my DMs. Let me know your thoughts and feels on New York, LOL. But oh, seriously, New York, Potomac, Salt Lake City, Orange County, all that and more. Please, please include your first name and town, no voice notes, and take up space. Expand thinking. I love a supersized satchel, and I will unpack many of those satchels of gold. Again, satchels of gold, your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Cloran Ben-Simone, on an upcoming Patreon episode. Number one way to support the pod. You get those exclusive bonus episodes at patreon.com/andysgirls. As mentioned, a lot of orgs and folks I support, which I share on my Instagram at Dame Galley. Also, a great place to slide into my DMs and send me your satchels. And that's where we are. Listen, weird day, weird moment in time, weird way to talk about it on a podcast about housewives psychology. But also, If I was not talking about this moment in time and my identity, when I've brought so much attention to other causes and crises throughout the 1736 years that AG has existed, I don't know what I would be saying to myself. So, and I understand that the conversation can be entirely triggering and also a great opportunity for people to manipulate whatever interpretation that they would like to hear or think that they have heard. And so, that's why, again, some of those organizations that you'll find in the show notes, which we'll be expanding because I want to share more about specific orgs that I find myself learning from. And this is the place to continue talking. This is the place to hear your thoughts and feels about Karen Huger's maybe moment of denial and maybe history of it. I don't know. TBD. I'm curious for all your thoughts on a busy week ahead. My next project is, now that I'm caught up on Orange County, now that I'm caught up on New York, which is such an LOL since there was a single episode, now that I'm caught up on Potomac, again, LOL, single episode, it is my time now to catch up on Salt Lake City. And I don't know how this happened, but I really didn't hear a ton of specifics about the last two episodes I haven't seen, which thrilled me until one of the moments was discussed on Karen's Watch What Happens, which is entirely my bad for not being able to catch up. So I'm excited too. So that'll be the next episode, is a deep dive of all things Salt Lake right in time for the next new episode of Salt Lake This Week. All right. Thanks to all of you for listening, and I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.